Hey y'all, hey! It is episode number 30, and I am Lolita E. Walker of lolitawalker.com. Can you hear all that rain behind me? It is pouring in Maryland. So if you are around and you absolutely know what is going down here, guess who's here with us on today's show? David Bianchi. Yep, actor, artist, philanthropist, socially conscious, spoken word performance poet, and an NFT history maker. And that's just to name a few. Now, as you know, we are literally just after the 1 year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. The poem that you are going to hear, the spinema that you are going to feel, the experience that you are going to have at the end of this episode is magical. Listen to this.
Shops have been looted in a sixth night of unrest.
Prominent streets, anything but quiet tonight, with more peaceful protests, but
is it really not enough when the rubber bullets fly? When the world is enraged from watching a black man die, gasping for breath, and the man says, "I can't breathe," with his esophageal tube collapsed under a man's knee.
Oh, wait. You didn't think you were getting all of that right now, did you? Absolutely not. But you already felt the power, right? I know I did. There is so much juiciness inside of this episode. But guess what? Towards the end, we have the entire 4 minute, 50 second spinema by David Bianchi. I can't breathe. You absolutely do not want to miss this, y'all. It's so good. Let's go.
Welcome to Coaching Cocktails and Conversations with Lolita E. Walker, the podcast that coaches you up while meeting you exactly where you are. Grab your water, tea, or something stronger, and allow this podcast to help you feel the power in your pause. Come on in and join the conversation. Let's go.
As always, we begin every episode with a powerful affirmation. Today's affirmation is, I am my words, because my words have power and there is power in my words. Yes. This affirmation and so many more can be found at lolitawalker.com/shop. This is a special shout out to all of you all who are new around this kitchen table. Hey, y'all. Hey. And a special shout out to all of you all who are returning. I already know you have pulled up your comfortable chair. Listen, around here, we break things down in three layers. The first is all about coaching. Now, this is where I leave you with a couple of nuggets just to challenge your thinking. The next is about cocktails. Now, this is not about what you are sipping on. It's more so about how you show up in all of your greatness every single time that you are right here with me around this kitchen table. And then finally, there's some good old-fashioned conversations. Sometimes it's just you and I, and other times I have a special invited guest. And today, my special guest is David Bianchi. Now, I told you a little bit about David, and I'm not even going to tell you too much because when we get into conversation, he breaks it all down. We are talking so many things today. That is why this episode is so special. David is not only talking about how he got into acting. He's not only talking about his historic moment with Spinema. Want to know what it is? Yep, you got to just go ahead and listen in. He even divulges a bit of his vulnerability as he talks about barriers that still stand in front of him. As he talks about the strength that he didn't always recognize was a strength. As he even drops a bit of inspiration for all of us.
Keep falling and keep falling forward, as Denzel Washington once said. Only thing that we can really do is take with us what we have become. Mm-hmm. And what we have become is a reflection of the legacy that we leave behind.
This is so juicy. Are you ready to get into it? I know I sure am. Right after an invitation to join me in Purcellville, Virginia. Now, this little bit right here is for all of our women listeners and for all of the men who are ready to send their special women in their lives on an all-inclusive 4-day weekend renewal retreat. Imagine yourself in a space free of distractions and ready to get poured into. Imagine an intentionally intimate space of power women leaning on you to shift from where you are today to where you absolutely want and need to be. Imagine me as a certified life leadership and executive coach grabbing you exactly where you are, pulling the greatness out of you and replaying that such that you increase your confidence, your clarity, and your commitment. Imagine a new group of women who are just like you and ready to push you beyond your next level. Yes, it is your time. So go ahead and head over to lolitawalker.com/retreats, learn a little bit more, and register for this upcoming Women's Weekend Renewal Retreat. What an amazing gift that this is to you, from you. You deserve it. It's time for some coaching and a little bit of soul work. All right, today's coaching surrounds our affirmation. Now, remember what it was. It was, I am my words. Because my words have power, there is power in my words, okay? What if your words had power? What if your words were those that you spoke to yourself about yourself today? Would you say that those words helped to fuel your power? Or would you say that they ciphered it out of you? Now imagine all of your thoughts today, your thoughts that turned into actions, your thoughts that manifested into words, your thoughts that went out into the world. Imagine that. So I want you to start writing some of those down, okay? Because I already know you have your CCNC journal right beside of you. You've already downloaded it from lolitawalker.com/podcast, and we are right here. This is the soul work for today. I was working with this amazing client the other day. She is super smart. She's super talented. She is super amazing and has so much experience. It's kind of ridiculous at the job that she's doing right now. She is just a powerhouse executive, okay? When we dug deep, some of her limiting beliefs and her thoughts were really crowding her space, okay? So much so that they were kind of coming out as she began talking. And that's no different than a lot of us. When we have all of this chaos that's surrounding us, when we feel like we're in the middle, but it's just chaos everywhere. Imagine those being your limiting beliefs. We just can't move. We just feel stuck. And sometimes we have to break those things down. So I ask you again, what words are you thinking about yourself? What words are you saying to yourself? And what words are you manifesting out into the world to others? So here's the exercise right here. I want you to draw a circle. Inside of the circle, I want you to write the word you, because that's you right there. Y-O-U. I'm doing the same thing right over here. Now let's call that circle number one. Then I want you to draw a bigger circle around that circle. Now we're going to call that circle number two. Okay. And a bigger circle around those two. So now we have three circles. Okay. The first one has you around it. But imagine around that is really the core of your values. What are some of your core values? What do you stand upon? What are those things like integrity, honesty, family? What are those things that are so important to you that if something tried to shake it, it would shake all of you? And you would say, absolutely not. Done deal. Then the next circle right there, that number two, I want you to write a couple of your strengths right there. What are some strengths that you know without a shadow of a doubt that you have? Now, sometimes it's a struggle for some of us. Okay. But I want you to ask about it. Ask somebody, what's the strength that you know that I have? And then how did you see me demonstrate it? And believe them, okay? In that third circle right there, I want you to write some of those limiting beliefs, some of those things that you've been telling yourself. What are some of those things you've been telling yourself? Now, for this client that I was talking to, I'll give you a couple of the ones that we kind of talked about just to give you an example. I am too young to do this job right here. Okay, I can understand why you would say that. You're the youngest person on your team. I'm not technical enough. Okay. I don't speak up enough. I don't think I'm going to do well inside of this job. Of course, everything leans upon fear when you dig down, but this is the work, okay? This is the soul work that I want you to take a look at. For all of these beliefs that you've told yourself inside of this day right here, I want you to ask yourself, is it really true? Have I demonstrated the opposite of that ever before? Because here's the thing, you're standing right here, just like in my TEDx talk. You're standing right here. So what you going to do? I'm too young for this job right here. Is that true? You might say yes. But then I would say, you're in this role. You were hired for this role. I don't know that you're too young for that role, but let's dig in a little bit. Why do you think you're too young for that role? Is it that you don't have experience? Because of what you just told me, you are a mountain of experience. You are the best person for the job. What if you were the best person for the job because you're already there? I'm not technical enough. Oh, but did they hire you for a technical position? Let's challenge that. Why do you feel that way? Is it required inside of the job that you're doing right now? I don't speak up enough. Okay, you're here. And if you know your gap, then let's figure it out. When was a time that you have spoken up? You have employees. Have you been speaking up on their behalf? You've gotten into this role. Have you told somebody that you absolutely wanted to be here because it was a career desire? What is it that we're telling ourselves? And the beauty of this exercise right here is that your limiting beliefs are on the outside core. They got to go through two more layers in order to get to the foundation of you. But guess what? You're strengthening those other two parts of your circle. This is the circle of you. You have your core values. You have your core strengths. That is the strength of absolutely you. We're going to knock those limiting beliefs out because back to our affirmation, we are our words because our words have power and there's power in our words. If you want to go deeper on exercises like this to really penetrate the depths of you, then let's chat. LolitaWalker.com/contact. It's time for some cocktails. What are we celebrating today? What are we celebrating today? I am so excited because today we are celebrating you. This is a cheers to you being aware. This is the cheers to you for challenging your limiting beliefs and remembering that your words have power and that there is power in your words. I'm giving you a cheers for combating all of those negativities and flipping them, asking yourself, is it true? And walking in all of that truth because you are greatness exactly where you stand. I am giving you a cheers for looking out in the world and recognizing that there is an opportunity for you to be socially conscious. How are you stepping into that? I'm giving all of the amazing women who have already purchased their tickets to the Women's Weekend Renewal Retreat a cheers for investing in you. Yes, this is going to be absolutely amazing. September 16th through the 19th, Purcellville, Virginia. I am giving you a cheers for deciding that now is the perfect time for you to pause and feel the absolute power in it. And the last thing is that I'm giving a cheers to David Bianchi because he is about to tear it down. You've waited long enough. You ready? Let's go. It's time for some good old-fashioned conversations. Hey, David, and welcome to Coaching Cocktails and Conversations. I'm just so excited to have you today. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here too. And we're going to have a great conversation, no doubt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here's the thing. Today, we are talking about how your spoken words can speak beyond words. And I've already talked to the folks around the kitchen table today about the fact that I met you on a social audio app. When you read your spoken word, I'm like, oh, I've got to have him on my podcast. And I'm in love with a number of the films that you're in. So we're going to get to that in a bit. I found this cool statistic about you when I was researching today. It said that you first appeared on stage in the third grade in Mexico City.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks for that great introduction, guys. My name is David Bianchi. I'm widely known as an actor and globally known as a spoken word poet and also independent film producer. But I'm an artist first, no matter what. I'm an artist first. I'm an actor second, writer, screenwriter, director, poet, and not necessarily in that particular order. But I remember vividly my first experience with performance was around second grade or so. We used to act out TV commercials on the swing set for other kids in the neighborhood. So kids would watch, and we'd be on a swing set watching, we'd go back and forth. And this is the time, the boom of TV commercials. So we would just make them up as we went along. In hindsight, that was my first experience with improv. So I was doing improv before I knew what improv was. I lived in upstate New York until second grade, and then my father was transferred on business. So we moved to Mexico City. I'm Afro-Brazilian and Italian, so I was raised speaking English and Portuguese. But then when I moved to Mexico, I was raised speaking Spanish. Now, the interesting story about that production was that I played Captain Hook in Peter Pan in third grade. And I still have pictures of it. I got the little wooden sword and the little hook, you know, and the mustache painted on my face. It was my first bug with a leading role in front of an audience, a real audience in a theater with lights and a proscenium stage. And, you know, you had to hit your marks and know your lines and all that, the structure of theater, you know. But what's important about that is whomever that teacher was, and I've tried to track the teacher down, mm-hmm. I probably owe an incredible amount of my theater career to that teacher because that teacher saw a young, skinny brown kid with energy, charisma, and charm. Mm-hmm. And despite all stereotypes, cast a skinny little brown kid as Captain Hook, who in textbooks and in storybooks is a Caucasian Spanish character. Mm-hmm. And so if that teacher didn't have the vision, or I'll say the lack of racial barrier to colorblind cast this pivotal character in the play, who knows? Maybe theater wouldn't have became my passion.
Oh, you know what's so good about what you just said is that teachers can play such a pivotal role in shaping who we are, right? So absolutely. Like you, your third grade teacher, I had a fifth grade teacher who poured into me and who really was the first one outside of my parents to really say that you got it. You got something right there. And I'm sorry you didn't have a chance to track down your teacher, but I had the opportunity to get with Miss Vera. And I tell you something, it's just magical when they can see you as a grown up and really you tell them face to face how powerful they were.
And I will say this, I haven't dug as hard as I can. So maybe this will be the impetus for me to dig a little deeper, because I think it's important that individuals know the impact, and impact good and bad. Let's not get it twisted. I remember vividly in second grade, before I moved to Mexico City, I was kicked out of class and sent to the principal because I was acting out. They had this big box of magazines and you'd pull out pictures of magazines. And so I liked the pictures of the ladies in the bras. And I used to tease the other girls in the class. And so I got kicked out of class for that. And I got a carbon copy, the pink referral carbon copy. And I got sent to my principal. Now this is upstate suburban New York at the time. And I'll never forget it. I sat at this in front of this big white man, and he had a big ashtray with a cigar in it, because this is the 80s. People were smoking everywhere. And he pulled out the referral and he waved it in front of me. And he said, "You see this here, son?" And he pulled out this black metal box, a black matte box with a silver latch on the front of it. And he opened it up. It's like a tackle box. And he said, "You see this here, son? This here's my nigger box. And I'm going to put this here in my nigger box. And I don't want you coming back here, because I don't want my nigger box getting full. You understand me, son?" I was in second grade. I had no context of what he was saying to me. In third grade, I moved to Mexico City, where those words didn't exist. You know, all those slurs that we know in America that I don't need to give a laundry list and repeat. But then I came back to the United States when I was 15, and I got thrown back into the public school system. And then suddenly the word nigger, I understood what it meant, and it rang like a bell. And I realized what my principal in second grade was saying to me. And then I realized who the principal of William C. Munn Elementary School, and I'll say it out loud, was saying, and what his views were, and how he was probably treating every single student of color in that school. I've been public about this, and there's been other students that were in my class that had those, that had similar experiences. Mm-hmm. And not to digress, but it's important, because a lot of the work that I do today is socially conscious work. And we talk about being people of color, and we talk about micro racisms, and we talk about how resentments resurface and how they affect us. Even now, being a fully functioning artist, you know, as an adult, that moment, I still see it clear as day.
And you know, what's interesting is the trauma of it all. It happened there, and you knew from his words that it wasn't something good, although you didn't understand the details of it, right?
Precisely.
You knew that you were in trouble for something, but not enough to go home and tell your parents, but enough where you're like, okay, I got in trouble for this. I did something wrong. So we internalize it, but it's kind of like, all right, I might have deserved it in your mind.
But he was taking it a step further.
Yes.
He was telling me in a language that I didn't understand, yes, that I'm one of those.
Yes.
And
yes,
you better stay out of here, because I'm going to keep treating you like one of those, whatever one of those is, which I didn't understand at that age.
Mm-hmm. And then for you to be triggered again. So you heard the word and it brought back the memory, which had never left, right?
Exactly. It had never left.
It had never left. And I love that you said to reach back out, whether good or bad, because sometimes the confrontation is more, hey, you know what? I know you might not remember this, but I want you to know now at this age, and me as successful as I am, what you said to me in second grade. And I want you to know that that penetrated my soul to the point where I think of it now, but look at me now.
You know, I say this a lot. I think that racism dies when the racists die. You know, I think it's an important segue to poetry. You know, we always grow up with that slogan of sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And I disagree. I disagree vehemently. You could beat me down to pieces. My nose and my face will heal. Broken hearts remain. We can glue a broken plate back together, but it's still a broken plate. Although it could still hold a meal, it's still a broken plate. Words can uplift, they can cut, they can penetrate, they can subdue, they can suffocate, they can elate, they can rise up, they can burn like a phoenix. They can do so much. And I think that it is important that as people of color, especially cultural leaders and public figures, you know, we're under a lot of scrutiny. You know, we have to do better. And not to say that I've spent my entire life doing well. I've got a colorful past. And I got a lot of people that I hope will forgive me for some of my behaviors when I was a younger man. But in this day today, I try to exercise as much responsibility as I can with the words that I use and how I use them, and especially in public platforms, because you never know who's listening. Mm-hmm. You never know who's watching. And oftentimes, the damage that we create in the world, the damage that we actually see, is only a fraction of the concussion. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the audience should really allow to sink in, that the damage that we create, what we see, is only a fraction of the concussion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things that when we started off this episode, I always start off with an affirmation. And the affirmation for this particular episode is, I am my words, because my words have power. And there's power in my words. So knowing that is exactly what it is you said, which leads me into poetry. So talk to me about, do you remember the time when you recognized poetry is how I'm pouring out for myself? When did you find the power in words? Do you remember when it was?
As soon as I was able to write, I loved alliteration. I loved the rhythmic nature of cat, hat, baseball bat, fact, just the way that words sort of like bounced, you know, they're almost like skipping stones on a shallow creek. Mm-hmm. Then you could tell I'm a poet in how I speak. Mm-hmm. I speak in colors. So as a result of liking the phonetic energy that words created and being an actor, I was already genetically predisposed to be able to do what I'm doing. See, I often talk about the molecular level gift. I believe that everybody has a molecular level gift that is almost written on you down to your genetic strand that gives you the physical, emotional predispositions to be able to excel at one specific thing that only you can birth into the world. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have to put in the 10,000 hours to master it. You know, LeBron James, for example, is genetically predisposed to being one of the greatest basketball players to ever live, but he still had to practice. He still had to find his craft. He still had to develop his voice, right? And so I think that for me, enjoying the percussion of language, but also having the physical knack as an actor, created the predisposition and created the right environment where I can master this craft that I do now, which is what I call spinema, spinning cinema through spoken word. Mm. And when I think about the phrase spoken word, and I say this oft, I resent the name spoken word as branding for my art form, because every word is spoken. So what the fuck makes you different? You know what I mean? Like, really, yeah. Every word is spoken. So when I think about the art form of spoken word, I like to call it performance poetry, because I think that at least what I do and what so many great poets do is it blurs the lines between the written word and performance art, in that if you go to an open mic, you can put a poet on mute and you could still feel an energetic feel. You can feel their sorrow. You can feel their elation. You can experience their pain, even if you can't hear their words, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a hybrid of different art forms, because just because you're a good writer doesn't make you a good performance poet. And just because you're a good performance poet doesn't mean that you're good at spinema, because you have to be able to understand how to communicate with a camera, not the back of a room, which is a very different and distinct style of performance.
Okay. So let me ask you this. How have your spoken words or your performance poetry, right, your spinema, how do they speak beyond words, beyond what's coming out of your mouth? How do you allow it to live beyond just words?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, art is only as good as its exhibition. I often say that the testament of good art is when it's on public display, whether it's a poem, whether it's a performance, whether it's a song, a rap, whatever it is that you do, and it goes on public display. And then the complete stranger takes time out of their life to cross the room and applaud you for what you've done. That's when you know you've done a good job. And that's how art lives on, because it lives in the hearts and the minds of the beholder. And I often say that when we get on stage and we perform for an audience, I owe it to myself, number one, but I owe it to my audience to not waste their time. Mm-hmm. You have given me your captive audience, so I'm going to show you that I dignify your time. I'm going to show you that I respect your time. And I'm going to make sure I leave you fulfilled so that my art can live on and you can then communicate about what you've experienced.
I love that. So here's one of the things I'm thinking about now as you're speaking is our words do have power. And even shifting from the poetry to literally speaking every day, when you go out and you even tackle issues that we're going to get into. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a social poet, you're a conscious poet. You talk about what's going on in the world, which is so relevant, yet it's so touchy, it's so emotional. What advice could you give to somebody and how they're showing up and the intention of it when you go to talk about these issues that's facing us that's so emotional?
Well, I think whether you're a poet or whether you're a carpenter, whatever it is that you do, show up for yourself with maximum intention. Show up for yourself and with every fragment of your body with the desire to do the best that you can. Now, the best that you can may not be the best as the next man. Mm-hmm. But knowing that you did the best that you can, because every experience in your life is going to unfold a new opportunity in your life. You know, I was on a, and I say that it's very important that we always step up to the best of our ability. And even if your knives aren't that sharp yet, keep falling and keep falling forward, as Denzel Washington once said. I was on a panel and the question was, how do I get my foot in the door? And one person said, well, you got to get an agent. Another person says, you know, well, you've got to get pictures and you should get coaching, you should get training and everything. Hey guys, with all due respect, build a door and walk through it. Mm-hmm. Build a door and walk through it.
I love it.
See, because your first door, you're not going to know how to sand the edges. You're not going to know how to get the nails from poking out. Maybe your nails going crooked and you don't know how to bevel edges, etc. But as you continue to build doors, eventually you'll become a craftsman. And as you become a craftsman, people will pay attention. And eventually what will they do? They will invite you to build doors for them. Mm-hmm. And that is what my experience has been. That when you focus in and you step up into your life with maximum intention to do the best that you can do, that will be your reality, right? As it relates to your question about stepping up for social consciousness or stepping up for anything, you have to be prepared for the responsibility that is associated with whatever you're stepping up for. Let me say it again. You have to be prepared to accept the responsibility for whatever it is you're stepping up for. It often gets my goat when public figures hem and haw about how they don't have any peace. Well, you signed up to be a public figure. Right? You have to accept the responsibility of what comes with that. And as it relates to social issues, for me, it's very important to accept the responsibility that if I am going to speak on these things in a public way, that I have to assume the responsibility of carrying that weight. And that includes, how do I comport myself? Who do I surround myself with? What are the places that I choose to frequent? How am I staying out of my own way? How am I being of maximum benefit to myself so I can be maximum benefit to my community? Mm-hmm. And that for me is spiritual, emotional alignment. That is carrying myself in a way that is dignified, that is astute, that is empowering, because I don't have a choice to do any other.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that this conversation is a direct result of being aware of that responsibility. Now, great. I've made some effective work that is raising social consciousness. I am by no means the poster boy for the BLM movement. I am not a political science major. I am certainly an observationalist with the knack for visual and written art.
I love it. Because one of the things that you have been able to do, which I say is history making, is you've been able to fuse, I'm going to call it spoken word and NFT. So let's just start here with, why don't you tell us a little bit about what NFT is for those folks who are listening and who might not know, they might have heard about it. And then tell us about what I'm calling history, but the work that you have done.
Sure. Well, thank you for that. And it is historic. I'll backpedal a little bit because I mentioned an art form called spinema. And I'll start there. So spinning cinema through spoken word. I have spent the better of 16 years of my life working in Hollywood, but producing short films told entirely in poetry that all have social undertones. I haven't been doing this because I wanted to buy the $5 million house. This is what I birthed into the world. This is how I choose to evoke change. And I've covered topics on the American occupation of Iraq, Latino children being abducted at the U.S. border, anti-bullying, sequestered during the pandemic. The list goes on and on. Our children living in jail-like communities in urban cities. What I've done is I've created this art form, and nobody in the world is producing spoken word films to the degree that I am, where I'm using, you know, 15, 20-person crews, treating them like films, original score, sound design, color correction, visual effects. I treat them like cinema. That's why I call it spinema. So that is a segue so that everybody can understand. You could check out some of my work at YouTube / David Bianchi. You could see a library of films there. As a result of that work, I produced a project called I Can't Breathe. And this is a piece that I wrote in the shadow of the death of Mr. George Floyd during the peak of the largest global civil rights movement in human history.
Crowds plowed through by vans driven by the men wearing blue. Who do you call when the cops are the killers? When the body camera footage shows me you're killing brothers and sisters.
This piece was critically acclaimed. It went on to air on KTLA's Emmy-nominated series called Breaking Bias. It was hailed by critics, hailed by Deadline magazine, etc. As the NFT space came to my attention, I was like, okay, how am I going to fit into this space? I see opportunities here. I just don't know how I'm going to fit in. So what is an NFT? An NFT stands for non-fungible token, which is really heady. Basically, I'm going to break it down very simply to you like this. There are a million pictures of Mona Lisa, but there's only one Mona Lisa. Okay. So if you look at what an NFT does, NFT basically takes a singular piece of art and it authenticates it on this thing called the blockchain. The blockchain is a series of decentralized computers that communicate all over the world. They are mostly used in cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Ripple, these sorts of things. It basically authenticates that one piece of art as unique onto itself and cannot be replicated ever. There's one Mona Lisa, but there's a bunch of calendars all over the world with the Mona Lisa on it. It's only one Mona Lisa. You take I Can't Breathe. I Can't Breathe can be on YouTube. It could be on my IGTV. But there's only one NFT of I Can't Breathe. And that can never be broken, duplicated, replicated, or dismantled. It's historic in that NFTs are typically singular digital pieces of art, 3D motion graphics, JPEGs, and things like that. This is the first time that an award-winning spoken word film had ever been minted as an NFT. And it ended up going to auction through a massive movement in Clubhouse talks, et cetera, and my collaborative partners. It ended up auctioning for 5 Ethereum. For anyone that doesn't know, by today's standards, I think Ethereum is at about $2,500 today. So that's about $11,000, almost $12,000.
That's good. Congratulations.
Thank you. And bigger than that, I made the commitment to donate 100% of those proceeds to the George Floyd Memorial Foundation.
Excellent.
So this is an opportunity where not only was it historic in that the NFT was minted and the kind of NFT was minted using artivism to affect real change. And so now I'm working with the George Floyd Memorial Foundation to establish a digital wallet, which is incredible. It's a breakthrough because now we get to bring the blockchain into the civil rights world. Not only that, we get to bring the blockchain and cryptocurrency into the inner cities of Minneapolis. So now we get to educate Black folks on cryptocurrency and how to build their own standalone wealth in the new financial renaissance of humankind.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes. Amazing. You know why? Because oftentimes in our communities, it's a gap in education, right? The awareness of it. Half the time you don't know. It's the lack of education and it's the lack of opportunity and the lack of willingness. So I like to say it's your ability, your willingness, and your action, which fuses in this opportunity. And there lies within the gap. But what it sounds like you're doing is I'm going back to the community. I'm going to educate them. I'm going to make them aware and I'm going to bring like, hey, let me talk to you about what an NFT is. Let me tell you what I did. Let me tell you how I made money from it. Let me tell you how I'm pouring it back into the community. And let me show you how you can begin to leverage the same thing. It's so big. So
absolutely.
Thank you for doing that. It's just so big.
Thank you for understanding the scope of it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like at street level, if we go to inner cities, like why do cats buy kicks? Because that man got them kicks. Yo, them kicks are gangsta. I'm gonna get a pair of them kicks too. It's all word of mouth, right? Unfortunately, in inner cities and in our inner cities where education, unfortunately, isn't held at the highest vanguard, word of mouth is what gets people to activate. So somebody on Fifth Street tells the next man on Sixth Street that he just bought some Ethereum. I'm like, Ethereum? What the fuck is Ethereum? Hey, Ethereum is this new thing, man. It's on this blockchain thing, man. It's like, you can buy a little bit, buy as much as you want, buy as little as you want, but it's going to grow. Okay, cool. So now it's just word of mouth. Even if that's how it has to travel, okay, cool. Absolutely. Let's start to motivate people to understand and not be afraid of technologies, but immerse themselves in technologies. And my commitment is to continue to mint is the term for creating, is to continue to create spoken word NFT films And my mission is to every single film that I turn into an NFT, I will give money to a 501c3 that is associated with that social topic. My goal is to give at least $150,000 to different charities by the end of this year. That's me trying to just be meager because, you know, in a real way, I would love to be able to come the end of fourth quarter, we've given over $500,000 to 501c3s. I want the money to go where it's going to evoke real change.
Yes, yes. Because what I heard, I'm always in this clarity statement. My brain works in that. So what I heard you just say is by December 31st of 2021, that was the date you just said, right?
Correct.
Great. So by December 31st of 2021, so you will have produced NFTs that make at least $150,000 in donations to go to 501c3s that are affecting change inside of our inner cities.
Yes, correct. Except the last part, not necessarily our inner cities. I produce films that cover all social topics.
Fair.
So, you know, so I have projects that are about inner cities. I have projects that are about immigration. I have projects that are about anti-bullying.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So whatever topic the film is speaking on.
Oh, got you.
A portion of those proceeds will go to a 501c3 that is focusing on anti-bullying.
I love it.
I'm a poet that has a really unique art form. And so everybody needs to understand that spoken word is a side effect of the underlying condition, right? So again, spoken word is a side effect of the underlying condition. There needs to be police brutality, unfortunately, to give us something to write about. You need a broken heart to spill it on a page. Unfortunately, we needed Donald Trump to give us angry things to write about, unfortunately.
You know, I do believe that God makes no mistakes and puts things and people and places and spaces for a reason. And
amen.
The trauma of it all. We amen. Absolutely, our trauma breeds our creativity, which breeds change. So in amen. That sense, I absolutely agree. Now, yep. Listen, this is so juicy. We could talk about this forever. But what I want to do is get into what I call the come as you are round. So this is how it works. I'm going to throw a couple questions at you and you just going to come with whatever you got. It's easy.
I'm ready.
First is, what is one strength that you know you possess right now, but you didn't always know was a strength?
My sobriety.
Ooh, talk to me more.
It's actually a very unique intersection in my life right now. In a matter of weeks, I will be coming up on 4 years of being continuously sober.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And look, you know, a lot of it was fun while it lasted. For me, it started out as fun, and then fun turned into fun with problems, and then it turned into just problems. And then I got to a point that I believe that I received G-O-D, the gift of desperation, that I got so desperate that I was willing to look at another way to live my life and what I thought I'd never wanted. Because how many people do we know? And I don't know who I'm talking to out there. How many people do we know that are getting in their own way? How many people do we know that are drinking too much, that are smoking too much, that are snorting too much, that are doing whatever too much? Never ever believe that they would ever want to, like, I'm not trying to, man, they don't even drink. I ain't trying to be around them. They don't even sip on nothing. I was that person. Mm-hmm. I never believed that I wanted this life, but it's probably the biggest asset and the biggest strength that I have right now. Outside of God, you know, the work that I've done on myself has really reaffirmed for me that everything that I do is God's work and that I'm just a walking, talking vessel.
Oh, that is the big one. That's a big one, because what I hear from you is acknowledgement and awareness and the desperation to know that you needed something different or else.
That's it.
And so congratulations to you. 4 years. That is major. Congratulations. Okay. Here's the second one. What is one barrier that still stands before you today?
Judgment. Mm-hmm. And I like saying these things and I like admitting these flaws that none of us really want to talk about, that I am a judgmental person and I have to work at that. Another one that I have trouble with is lack of patience and also unfair expectations. Mm-hmm. I am very refined. I have an incredible work ethic. So I have trouble not putting my expectations on other people as what I expect you to deliver. Mm-hmm. No. Life doesn't work that way. And, you know, looking at things and sizing things up, as they say, you know, judging a book by its cover, or contempt prior to investigation, right? So these are things that I have to work on. These are things that I actually pray about every single day. Every morning when I wake up, I get on my knees at the foot of the bed, no matter where, whether I'm in a hotel room, traveling, on business, or home. I just ask God, I say, God, just give me the strength to be patient today. Give me the strength to have pause. Give me alignment. Give me the courage to be the best person that I can be. Give me the ability to make critical decisions, the right decisions. I ask for these sorts of things to just align myself. Because, you know, they say you can't teach old dog new tricks. I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that if people have the will to change, they can, but it takes daily practice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I really have to pay attention to so I can catch them at bay. Because it's almost like the cartoon, you know, like people speak in bubbles. You ever say some shit and all of a sudden you wish you could pull that bubble back?
I think of that all the time. Seriously, I think of the call out bubble all the time. Sometimes I'm silent and someone says something. I'm like, if only they knew my thoughts right now. And I see those bubbles. So that's hilarious.
Yeah. And this is for the audience too. You know, patience and pause as it relates to not just what you say, as it relates to what you text, what you email, what you tweet. Last thought on this topic, and we'll move on, is that one of my mentors said to me, he says, David, you know, when you wake up, you often can't control your first thought, but you can always control your first action. And as it relates to people, places, and things and circumstances, things that will rub us the wrong way, sometimes we can't control that thought, but we can control how we respond to the thought.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down and around.
It often takes at least 2 to 4 seconds until we actually respond to the thought.
Actually, think about it. Yeah.
If you respond at second one and two, it's going to be the wrong reaction.
Yes. I do believe in the power of the pause. And so the people around the kitchen table today, what they do know is I am very consistent when I say you must feel the power in your pause. You got to feel that power so that you can react appropriately and to you give yourself a chance to think for a minute. And another thing you said, it sparked me to think, is that you control the pace. Don't allow anyone else to control the pace. Somebody's asked you a question. You don't have to just come right back. You actually can take a minute and think about it. And if you're not ready, then guess what? You can come back later. And just knowing that, because oftentimes we're going to jump right in. So I love that you said that it sparked this. Okay. And here's one that I have for you too. Why is the work you do so important?
I mean, to be quite honest, I mean, that's such a subjective question, isn't it?
It is. That's why I love it.
You know, because what is important to one is not important to another.
Yep.
You know, I will say this. The work that I do because it helps me breathe. Mm-hmm. The work that I do because it helps me sleep at night. We can be activists in many different shapes and forms. Some people are picket signers. Some people are speakers. Some people are painters, poets, videographers. We all get to do our part. It's important to me because it helps me believe. It puts me in a knowing that I am leaving a legacy. As it relates to our experience on this planet, we can't take anything with us. Only thing that we can really do is take with us what we have become. Mm-hmm. And what we have become is a reflection of the legacy that we leave behind. I have a vision that, you know, in my later years, hopefully knock on wood before I leave this planet, there'll be a gallery, whether it be a virtual gallery or in the metaverse, or whether it be a physical gallery or both, that will be a collection of the works of David Bianchi. Mm-hmm. That will be my work as an actor. That will be my poems. That will be my cinema. That will be my fine art. That will be photography that I produce. That I am an interdisciplinary artist, and I want to be able to leave an impact in any way that I can. This work is just part of that legacy. And at the end of the day, too, it's like, what excuse do I have? Mm-hmm. Our ancestors, they really, really fought. I want to be a good ancestor. I want the people ahead of me in 2080 and 2090 to be able to look back and say, man, David Bianchi, he was doing something. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good ancestor.
Well, that's great, because the imprints that you leave, the breadcrumbs that you leave, are results of the work that we're doing right now. So I appreciate all of the work that you're doing, how you're pouring back in to community, how you're pouring back into yourself. And the big piece that I'm always talking about is this notion of self-reflection and then self-doing, right? And when you do the work, you become the work, you are the work, and you emit the work. So that is just so exciting. And as I even hear you talking in rooms, it pours out of you. So just know that what you want to get across, what you're talking about right now about why your work is important, absolutely comes across whenever I do hear you speak. So thank you very, very much. I'd love for you to tell us a couple things. One, where can folks find you as if they don't already know? And then the second is, what upcoming film and TV do you have coming up? Because I just signed up for one and I want you to talk about it.
Oh, okay. My Instagram is DavidBianchi_official, Twitter at DavidBianchi, Facebook at DavidBianchi as well. That's B-I-A-N-C-H-I. Follow me on the gram because I'm always posting messages of inspiration. You never know, you land on David Bianchi on a Tuesday and I might be speaking a message that just might speak to you. Definitely follow me there. As far as shows are concerned, I'm currently recurring on season 4 of Queen of the South on Netflix.
So good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm also heavy, heavy recurring on Tyler Perry's Ruthless on BET Plus, and also now on BET Networks as well. Just had a big episode of SWAT and just shot a Netflix show with Kevin Hart and Wesley Snipes that I can't really speak much on that about. And then I'm also recurring on a show called SEAL Team. We just finished the fourth season, or what we call the fourth deployment. But there's other stuff. I mean, I'm out. Thank you for asking. Yeah, IMDb if you're into film and television.
Yes. What about the one with Lisa Nichols?
Ah, yeah. So I that's another piece of Spinema.
Yep.
Called Let's Grow, and that piece is a project that I co-wrote with Lisa Nichols and a great leadership speaker named Sean Smith. And it's actually my most ambitious piece of Spinema to date. It's a 16-minute transformational spoken word film that deals with racism in its most difficult place. It's a poetic argument between me and a Caucasian man, him taking an all lives matter sort of bigotist approach and me taking a pragmatic Black Lives Matter approach. And it's a very difficult argument that we go back and forth through poetry. And Lisa Nichols is the overseeing matriarch, but she reveals herself incredibly powerfully in that film. It will be releasing wide soon. And who knows, maybe eventually that will become an NFT.
Yes. And you know what? People can sign up for that now. I signed up and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So we'll make sure that everything, David, is in the show notes and folks can catch up with you. And if they're not familiar, they can get familiar. And if they are, they'll love it even more. So thank you so much. We're going to go off to I Can't Breathe. Thanks for being here today.
Shops have been looted in a sixth night of unrest.
Across the streets, anything but quiet tonight with more peaceful protests. But
is it really not enough when the rubber bullets fly? When the world is enraged from watching a Black man die, gasping for breath, and the man says, "I can't breathe," with his esophageal tube collapsed under a man's knee. Is it not enough to wake in the wake of hate perpetuated by a system dating back to Negro slaves? Beat that Black man, make him pick cotton, shoot that Black man, he looks like he's up to something. Is the American fury not enough for you? Crowds plowed through by vans driven by the men wearing blue. Who do you call when the cops are the killers? When the body camera footage shows me you're killing brothers and sisters. Is the execution of a man, is that not enough for you? Judge, jury, and execution by a man dressed in blue. You look down at us for behaving like an angry mob. If all men are created equal, what gives you the right to play God? Where is the leadership? Where is the fight? 4 days to be arrested for murdering a man in plain sight, and a 9-day riot to arrest the other three, right? Did it maybe occur to you that our hearts are broken, that we're tired of being hurt and our culture not moving forward? Be it Selma, Malcolm X, the death of Dr. King, Freedom Riders' Bloody Sunday, I can hear the choir sing. Rosa Parks, the LA riots, the beating of Rodney King. Eric Garner, Philando, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, can you feel the sting? You'll arrest hundreds of young minds and voices of the generation to come, but all you had to do was give us justice for one. Now you've created a resentment that will stretch a generation, that will instill fear in the police administration, in the eyes of the young people who know what is right. Trusting in the biblical law of thou shalt not kill. Right. Aren't you just tired of the pain? The anguish and the struggle? Aren't you tired of the fear, disdain, and anger for one another? Aren't you tired of the intimidation, the injury, and the judgment? Do I look infected to you because I'm not white? Do you see me as evil without blue eyes in my sight? Am I not human? Do I not walk upright? So why do you beat me? Why do you shame me? Why do you draw your weapons on sight?
Police, get your hands in the air! Get the fuck down!
Yes. Officer, yes.
I said get the fuck down!
I'm talking to you. The man representing the red, white, and blue. For the broken eye sockets and the rubber bullet concussion, tear gas and billy clubs inciting more violence. Yet another reason to protest. Yet another reason to scream. Trace it back to the slave days and everything in between. The looting and the destruction is a side effect of our scream. The world protested, marched, and we cried, stop the racism. Please make police brutality die. And this isn't just for black folks. This is for all of humanity. So we can live in a country where we can feel protected and free. Is it not enough to see a black man shot in the back? Running from a man in a badge with his Glock pistol cocked back. Ticking time bomb has exploded and we can't afford to wait and see if justice will be served or if there'll be another black man hanging from a tree. Volcanoes must erupt to create new land, and sometimes violence is the answer to a heavy opposing hand, and the fire and brimstone evoke justice in a conversation, and so now I pray quietly for an answer to the situation. I have hope that humans will pass this social test. Because I'm not sure that the world can handle another collapsed neck.
We have concluded another episode of Coaching, Cocktails, and Conversations with Lolita E. Walker. Connect with me at lolitawalker.com for speaking, coaching, and my book, The Intersection of You and Change. Next time, bring a friend. Cheers.